Curtis Sliwa.
Boom!
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa from the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Seven minutes after the hour 12, and the sex harassing, sex assaulting Grim Reaper has grabbed another big whale out there in the world of media and TV. With Rita Cosby in the house today, no better time to have her because you actually worked at NBC for a while, didn't you,
I did.
Rita?
I did. I was there 2005 to 2007. Know Matt Lauer, worked with him, and, you know, there were rumors about consensual relationships there at NBC for years. And then in the last few weeks, I was hearing from my sources that there were a number of these stories in the works, and today a huge bombshell.
Oh, yeah. He's gone. And if you believe the New York Times story, which I think was meant to try to up the Washington Post, which had been researching these allegations.
Yeah, you think it's a big competitive thing, which I think is fascinating, Curtis.
Oh, yeah, because remember, it was the Times that cold-busted Harvey Weinstein. Then it was the Washington Post that got Judge Moore. And so these are the two go-to, what we would have called years ago, tabloids.
Yeah, the scoopers.
Right, in trying to find the dirt on people in terms of what they've done on the down low. And in this case, we don't know the details. We know small details. Maybe by the time we get into this whole hog in the 1 o'clock hour, we'll know more. But it's interesting because the New York Times would have you believe that the woman in question, the victim, walks into the offices of HR at NBC, 6 o'clock Monday night, this week.
Right, with her attorney,
right.
And now suddenly this surprise claim, so they say.
And here's a guy who's worth gazillions of dollars to the NBC brand.
Mil.
And within the course of one day after the allegation is made, they do a full-throttle investigation, and Matt Lauer is sacked as of last night. The announcement made earlier today on the Today Show. And I find that incomprehensible. I note that the Washington Post was on his jockstrap, and they probably sensed that story was coming out with all the details, and they just jump-started this story in order for the Times to claim we had it first.
Yeah, no question. I mean, if you look at the tea leaves, I mean, you have to be, I think, just dumb and blind and whatever thing else to be able to say, wait a minute. Suddenly, as you say, they walked in at 6 o'clock. I mean, if that were the case, think about how long it took in the case of O'Reilly. Remember, I worked at Fox News for 10 years. I know the way it works. I know the way NBC works.
Sure.
And you sit there and you think about the time period it took for O'Reilly for those allegations. And again, I always had a good relationship with O'Reilly. And I also had a good relationship with Matt Lauer. But NBC, a very red tape corporate company, is not going to suddenly just say, boom, okay, we got this allegation from this woman. Barring her having a blue dress like Monica Lewinsky, you still have to test the DNA. There's
right.
No way in
unless,
heck. Come on, yes.
Unless Matt Lauer did a Louis C.K. and said, you got me.
I don't think so. Do
no,
you? I don't
not.
Think so. I do not think so. And we haven't heard anything, by the way, from Matt Lauer yet today.
He probably lawyered up weeks ago when it was rumored that the Washington Post was on his jockstrap. They started to work on a plan for him to exit stage left, severance, just like O'Reilly got, unprecedented millions, in order for NBC to clean themselves. Because remember, they're so knee-deep in problems there, having actually had the Harvey Weinstein story.
Yes, and sat on it, the whole Ronan Farrow
right.
thing. And by the way, I talked to a couple sources this morning at NBC, and they were telling me, a couple of my buddies there were saying that there's rumors that there's a couple others that they are investigating, up to three others.
Well, anyway, our number is 1-800-848-WABC. As we're high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us in order to do this broadcast to all of you on the 50,000-pound for watts of sound by NJDiet.com. And let's see, the clock is ticking here, Rita. It is now Wednesday. We are 14 days away from that, 2 weeks from now, Wednesday.
CD day.
That's
Colitis
right.
Day.
When I will be under the knife. When the surgeons will once again open the zipper on my stomach, since I've been opened up so much in my lifetime.
Well, that's what I was gonna, I have a prediction, and I said this to you before the show. I am betting $5 that Curtis Sliwa is going to come back on Monday, because you are such a diehard. You have been shot at. You have been pushed. You have been, God knows what you have gone through in your entire life, that I know that you've told me on the air and off the air. There is no way that you can keep Curtis Sliwa down.
Right, but this I got to be careful of, because it is really complicated surgery, the ulcerated intestines that has become full-blown Crohn's disease. You see, the idea is people who've had Crohn's disease, and I met many of them, they tend to be Jewish, because people see it as being a genetic disease with a predisposition of it existing within the Jewish community. And for the most part, that is.
You were talking, and nervous people too. I told you that broadcasters have this. I had a lot of my colleagues, I remember years ago, because we'd sit and wait outside to, like, you know, you'd stop, you wouldn't go to the bathroom regularly, you wouldn't eat regularly, and you are a workaholic, my friend, too.
Right, but the idea is they do the one surgery, they take out part of my stomach, they give me the colostomy bag that I've had to wear after 92 when I got shot up, and then they give me the morphine pump to deal with the pain, and I'm good to go. Now,
that sounds like what Matt Lauer is going through this morning.
Yeah. If everything works out, it should only be a week of recovery. If there are complications, as the surgeons have suggested, it looks like that when you look at the MRI and the other tests they've done. It could be a month or more.
Now, what are they saying are the complications?
Just there's so much damage. Remember, I got shot with 5 hollow point bullets, so it shredded my intestines.
Yeah, it's like, I just got shot with 5 hollow point bullets.
So when I was recovering, the intestines were actually in a bag. They were actually healing. I could actually watch the process.
So it's a much more sensitive operation because of some of these things.
Much more. And the damage, naturally, you think back to 1992, it's slowly taking its toll. I've suffered with this for 2.5 years, lost 60 pounds, not because I wanted to. And I'm down to, and you saw me eating it, turkey and Gatorade. That's it.
Yeah,
that's all I can consume.
You're so careful what you eat. By the way, now, are the Guardian Angels going to be there watching over the surgeon's knife?
They're going to be watching every step of the way, because I got a lot of enemies. And let's face it, think of how easy it would be to just snuff me out.
Ah, the old, there's a conspiracy
exactly.
going on in the operating room.
Exactly.
Can you imagine? Or the guy cutting the knife is going to be shaking so much. You got to be careful of that, because he's going to be so panicked.
Exactly.
Oh, what if I do it wrong? Oh, no.
Exactly. Although I want everybody right now to contribute to this. As I explained to everyone yesterday, Rita, we run the Guardian Angel Animal Protection Division through my girlfriend, Nancy Regula. She's been developing cat colonies throughout the city for 10 years now. And what we do is we get feral cats together, and we put them in a community in which they can deter the rat population and rodent population naturally and live outdoors. We rescued a three-week-old kitty.
Oh, how cute. I love cats. Oh.
From Sunset Park on this past weekend.
Beautiful.
And there's no doubt this kitten would not have made it. Because already the mother basically was starting to push it out, realizing that it was the smallest in the litter. Darwinian survival instincts were
taken
over.
Which is so sad, as you point out, because the most vulnerable, too, of course.
Right, so Nancy swept up the kitten. And you see a picture last night as I was trying to sleep, because it was a difficult night for me. The kitten actually snuck into my red jacket and began to cut some Z's. Because, you know, kittens will sleep about 20 hours within the course of a 24-hour day. So the kitten was sleeping. And what we're asking everyone to do is to go to the Curtis Facebook page at WABC. We're looking to come up with a name. So we already have for our other rescued cats. There's the Persian cat, who is Hercules. He's the patriarch. Then there's Apollo. He's a tuxedo cat. He was rescued from a kill shelter in East New York. And then there was Athena, who Nancy rescued again in the streets of Sunset Park when she was being put out, because she wasn't able to survive the ordeal when a mother has so many kittens, and then obviously the weakest ones are just not going to get through that first year of their existence.
Which, by the way, I love. This is sort of a mantra of the gold, you know, the Guardian Angels to like protect the weakest among us. So I love. By the way, have you? It's a girl or a boy?
This one? I believe it's a girl.
Did you check?
Actually, Nancy's the expert on that. I'm confused. You know,
I thought you were the expert on women.
Yeah, women, but not female cats. I don't know if it's transgender. I don't know if it's male, it's female. Who knows? Maybe it's going through transition.
Because that may depend on what you call it, first of all. You've got to figure that out.
If you go to the Curtis Facebook page at WABC, we're looking for a name, and we're also looking to adopt it out.
Love that.
Because that's part of what we do at the Guardian Angel Animal Protection Division. Now, the other case.
Is this story. This is disgusting. This is, of course, this Brooklyn man, and he pleaded guilty to kicking kittens. Remember, this is the guy, the famous cat kicker. And it got so many headlines years ago. I can't believe, first of all, it's been 3.5 years.
Well, 2014, he gets locked up because he does a video of him.
Unbelievable.
Outside of the Brevoort Projects in Bed-Stuy, Do or Die, in which he's got his Timberland boots on, and he's kicking this cat up in the air over and over again as if it was a soccer ball.
I was about to say, when you first saw it, I remember looking at it and thinking, oh my gosh, that looks like it's a football or a soccer ball. It's a cat. It was the most mortifying, and I love animals. You know, I'm one of those people, I grew up with animals all my life, Curtis, so I love animals, and this just broke my heart. And now to find out this guy basically got a cakewalk.
He got 10 days of community service. Now, he's had to go to other jurisdictions because criminality is in his DNA.
Yes.
He's been busted in Virginia, busted at other locations. So this trial has ended up going on from 2014 to now.
Which, by the way, what a testament to the justice system. You know, and I always see these cases that drag on and on. This is a cat. It's pretty easy. It's on video. You see what he did. Where is there gray area?
Right.
And it took 3.5 years.
10 days of community service, no jail time.
And what he said.
Oh, so he's walking out, and animal rights activists, to their credit, have endorsed this guy at the court, and he looks at them with a big dumb grin on his face, and he goes, I'm going home, and I'm getting me a new pair of Timberland boots.
What a disgusting pig.
So,
I mean, to me, this is so shameful. This guy, first of all, he is so lucky that that's all he got. He should have been thrown in the slammer right after it happened. And to have the audacity, it just shows the balls of these guys.
So, ladies and gentlemen, should he only have gotten 10 days of community service? And if you had been the judge, what would you have given this Andre Robinson, this menace to society, for kicking that cat up in the air 10 straight times as if he was kicking a soccer ball?
And showing no remorse.
None.
Right? That is what is so disgusting when you see these, like, sort of revolving door. This is like the classic case where you need to throw the book at him to send a message. Because, again, you and I love animals. I mean, I spent my whole life, I always try to go to the shelters. I have so many friends who've adopted from the shelters or strays like what you guys are doing. It is disgusting.
1-800-848-WABC. What kind of time should he have been given? 1-800-848-9222. And I'm putting this guy, Andre Robinson, age 24, at the Brevoort Houses in Bed-Stuy, which I've run through on many an occasion, on notice. As you know, we just had the documentary done on my life in the Guardian Angels called
Which
Vigilante.
Was awesome. Awesome.
I will do a vigilante act on him. He is going to be eyeballed. His movements are going to be spotted.
Good for you.
If I hear of Andre Robinson harming another animal of any type, I am going to personally come visit Andre Robinson. I'm going to kick his ass out in the foyer of the building in front of all of his homies. He can call 5-0 and punk out.
Are you going to make him look like a soccer ball?
Oh, yeah. He'll be my Maytag as I drag him all over the courtyard there. And that'll be true vigilante justice, because clearly the criminal justice system has failed us on this.
Absolutely. And you know what also, Curtis, too? And we've talked about this before. These kind of people who hurt animals, to me, you know, I have such a soft spot for animals and just love them so much. And to hear this, you know, it's sort of a forebearer, somebody who's going to sit and kick a harmless cat.
Well, remember,
you know,
Texas shooting in that small Southern Baptist church,
yes.
The guy who did it was an animal abuser first.
Yep.
And generally that's what happens. They start abusing animals, then naturally it's people, children, women, men, co-workers. It just escalates out of control there. 1-800-848-WABC.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
77 WABC.
Got to get ready for the big payback. The big payback. That's where I land. Oh, for the big payback.
Andre Robinson, big payback. Tough guy. kick the cat in the air 10 times as if it was a soccer ball. Luckily, the cat named King survived, only to be adopted. But he threatened to do it again by telling the animal rights activists as he walked out of court yesterday with just 10 days of community service, I'm going home and I'm getting myself a new pair of Timberland boots.
Yeah, in other words, I'm going to go kick something else. I mean, this guy is absolutely shameful. And I just think this is such a clear indication of how messed up our judicial system is.
Let's go to Karen first up in the queue calling from Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here at WABC. Karen.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. We're angry, though. This is outrageous, don't you think?
Beyond outrageous. As an animal rights activist for many years, you hope that this stuff would end. It doesn't end. And then you get a judge where there's no justice in any way, shape, or form imparted on the guy who did this. This loser needs a few years in Rikers where he can be football or soccer ball du jour. This is not how you treat any living thing. And it won't stop it at a pet. It'll stop a child, a woman, another cat. There's something wrong with this guy, and society doesn't need him out there.
Yeah, I agree. He's a threat. And the fact that he walks out and says, oh, I'm going to get my Timberlands, in other words, ha, ha, ha. I mean, this is such a mockery of the system.
Okay. Well, he's on note, Karen. I know other animal rights activists, they're not going to want to use physical force. But I believe Andre Robinson only understands one language, the language of the streets, and that's
the language of the soccer ball.
Compliance. Pain compliance, I call it. Let's go to Sonny, who's calling from Bed-Stuy. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here on WABC, Sonny.
Hey, Sonny.
How you doing? I agree with you guys 100%. The part I call back, I'm from Bed-Stuy. Born and raised with the old boys' high, the original boys' high.
Yep.
You, Curtis, I seen you one time around Madison Square Garden. You're white. You ain't going to beat no brother in Bed-Stuy. Drag them out in the street.
What does color have to do with how you can kick booty?
They ain't going to let you do it.
Well, can I explain how I'm going to do this, Sonny?
You got to do a sneak attack. You can't go out there and move nobody. The white folks that live in Bed-Stuy right now, they know how far they can go, how far they can't go.
Oh, the millennials and hipsters, they're all in that area. I'm going to get off at Myrtle Avenue and Broadway on the J train. I'm going to go downstairs, walk over to the Brevoort Projects. If I hear that Andre Robinson has, again, attacked any animal of any type.
Now, are you going to walk alone or are you going to walk along with the gang?
No, I'll go by myself.
All right.
You see, when you go in there, when you roll strong, you're looking for beef with everyone else. And I'm going to warn all the homies, whether you know him or you don't, this is my beef with Andre. It's one-on-one.
And by the way, you have a lot of love in Bed-Stuy also, Curtis, too. You're not alone.
Well,
I disagree
Sonny.
With Sonny.
Sonny, so you're telling me this guy won't go one-on-one with me?
He might go one-on-one, which I ain't talking about that. You even had the right to whip his behind. But you see, understand, I'm from Bed-Stuy, too. If they see a white boy beating up a black guy, I guess he's black. I hope he's black.
He's black.
Yeah, he is.
Them homeboys, you know, you come with the Brevoort Project, and I know it well. They're going to come out there to his aid, man.
But Sonny, let me ask you, though. I got to ask you this, Sonny. The guy kicked a cat. He got 10 days. Don't you think, you know, he deserves a little butt kicking himself?
He shot a butt kicking. They should have kept him in jail and made him, you know, and took care of him that way. He got out.
But don't you think if Curtis walks in there, and they know Curtis with the red beret, walks in there, don't you think all the brothers are going to go, wait, bravo. There's some great brothers there.
No, let me tell you.
They're going to know the deal on this guy.
No, they'll actually cheer on the brother.
Well, they might, but I think there are some brothers who love cats. This is not a color thing. This is a cat-loving thing.
But it's also black and white. And so they're going to cheer the brother on, and I'm going to tell them it's one-on-one. Nobody jumps in.
I think some people are going to take some bets in your favor, too, my friend.
Best man wins. Look, I'm 63. This guy is, what, 24? I mean, think of that.
You got cats on your side. You're going to go in.
Yeah, think
You're going to go in strong,
I was going to tell
Curtis.
All the homies, yo, this young one can't take me. The new Jack can't take old school.
Oh, you're going to bait him. I see what you're doing. You're going to bait him, not just on the radio, but what are you going to do?
Then when he's not looking, I'm going to jap him, right? And I'm going to choke him and yoke him out.
Then see,
there's nothing about a fair fight.
But then what happens? What do the brothers do at that point? They sit back and go,
then they're
going
to try to jap me. So then feet don't fail me now. It's time for me to get back on the J train, Myrtle and Broadway, and head back to the city. Anyway, let's go to Scarlett in New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here at WABC. Scarlett.
Hi, Scarlett.
Oh, thank you so much. Hello to you, too. I first of all, I wish you all the best in your journey forward, Curtis. And Rita, I love you. I was at your birthday party some years ago, and you were very, very good with the Wounded Warrior.
Oh, thank you so much. And that, by the way, that was an awesome birthday where we honored the Wounded Warrior Project. And remember that, see, when that woman got up, this was a great birthday party. You're reminding me, Scarlett, because we had a lot of folks coming in from the public because it was a great charity. And we had that woman who got up and walked. Remember, it was the first time she walked using the devices. That was, that brought tears to my eyes. Thank you, Scarlett, for reminding me of that.
Oh, you're welcome. And third of all, I want you to name that cat Athena, goddess of war, and stick a bunch of feral cats on that guy.
Mm. Oh, that's a good idea.
Mm. And why didn't they give him some sort of mandatory psychiatric supervision? The man is a danger.
That's a great point, Scarlett. That's a great point. He should have had some psychiatric counseling, and anybody who saw the guy for 5 seconds would go, the guy is still a threat to society and still got problems. Yeah, you don't have to pay a psychiatrist $500 an hour to figure that one out.
Anyway, on that note, let's get our news headlines and updates from Ken Duffy.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
Green Acres is the place to be. Farm living is the life for me. Land spreading out so far and wide. Keep Manhattan, just give me that countryside.
This is the theme song of Comrade Bill de Blasio. And today in the house is Rita Cosby, our political director here at WABC. You can hear us so nice. She does it twice on Sundays, first at 6 in the morning, and then she comes back at 11. But Rita, you've been following the exploits of the mayor, and there's a full two-page spread in New York's hometown newspaper, The Daily News, today about how he's beginning his presidential campaign, him seeking the Democratic nomination the next time around against Trump in 2020 by going to plow the fields of Iowa.
Yeah, and in fact, he's going over there. He's giving the keynote at a fundraiser for Progress Iowa. And here it is. You know, I mean, we're talking weeks away from his, you know, re-election emerging back in, his inauguration, his second inauguration re-election. And, you know, what's so interesting, Curtis, the night of the election, here we are, it's November 7th, and I remember when it was called. Right away in his victory speech, I think it was like two or three sentences in, he uses the word Trump and he talked about national issues. And right away, I was like, he's running for president. And sure enough, here he is. He says he's not running for president. He was asked, in fact, immediately after he won the second term, he was asked right away, so are you running for president? He said, I plan to serve out my full term. They all say that. But look at what he's doing right away. He is going to Iowa, and of course, that's so key because of the Iowa caucus.
Yeah, going out there to Iowa where there are more pigs than people. Although he had the shock of his life last night. I wasn't feeling that well.
I know, so this is good.
I didn't know if I would go or not. Arthur Idala, yep. Noted attorney, noted lens slice on TV on legal issues and here on the radio, had invited me, he and his family, to his 50th birthday party at the Dream Hotel.
Yeah, big one, and like his law firm's thing, and I thought about going there, but I actually had another event, which I'll talk about later. But boy, I wish I could have been a fly on the wall, based on what you're
going
to say.
Well, actually, it wasn't so much going for Arthur or his family that I've known. It was knowing that that room would be filled with a lot of political crooks from Brooklyn, where I grew up. And I couldn't wait to eyeball them and see who was in the room and who wasn't. And I should have known. The kingmaker of all. The man who has put City Hall up for sale to lobbyists and those who are ready to spread their schiato for Bill de Blasio's so-called needs. That the lobbyists were there, the lawyers were there, the real estate interests were
there. John Reichnitz, did you see him?
No, Reichnitz wasn't there, his partner Reichberg, but some other cronies from Brooklyn, all who I recognize. They were there to pay tribute to Arthur Idala. But who was the host of the birthday party? It was Comrade Bill de Blasio. And the moment Team de Blasio saw me walk in.
Yeah, but yeah, like, describe this moment, because boy, I wish I had a camera for this. Go ahead.
He was speaking at the time, and his bodyguards immediately moved in a pincer-style movement to block me off, thinking I'm going to try to bum rush or maybe disrupt the mayor. I had no intention of doing that, had no idea he'd be there. So I'm listening intently, and then all of a sudden, a woman comes out of the crowd, right? An older woman, she's wearing red, you know, looks almost like a mini guardian angel, and it's Arthur Idala's mother from Bay Ridge, and she's saying, Curtis, You're supposed to be Italian. How dare you call Mario Cuomo brutta faccia, Mario Cuomo does not have a brutta faccia. I said, hey, did you see the tourister bags underneath his eyes?
But so now, did she bring up de Blasio?
We're arguing about Mario faccia brutta Cuomo.
And meanwhile, your eyes are on, by the way, and everybody, you know, and we all know this too, but it's so funny to see, because so many times I've seen de Blasio in person, and he's so tall, and his bodyguards are like half his size, which is kind of funny, just visually to see.
The people,
you know,
are thinking that she is interfering with the mayor, like she's running interference for the mayor.
Right, she's the bodyguard, right?
Right, but she tells me that all the time whenever I see, hey, you know, Mario Faccia Brutta, stop calling him Faccia Brutta. All right, so we put that aside.
Right.
And I'm listening to the mayor speak, and he's, you know, he's waxing poetic, all the crooks and all the lobbyists and all the contributors that he sees in that room there from Brooklyn. And I'm saying, he's going to Iowa while violence is running amok in Rikers Island. He's going to Iowa while there's a record number of people flooding into homeless shelters, especially now with the temperatures plummeting.
Let's not forget about the lead paint. All these issues.
Right,
and
lying.
Of course, and you know what, you know, you think about, too, remember in the height of everything else, too, right after the officer was killed, and that was a big source that Sal and everybody else brought up during the debate, was he goes off to Germany.
Yeah.
So during sort of these key times, and here it is, he's heading into his reelection. Of course, he, you know, gets in, and it's an important time. There are so many issues facing New York that we all talk about. I mean, you go on the subway. I was on the subway the other day. I was like, oh, my God, it looked like somebody was going to the bathroom. I think they were. I kind of smelt it, but that's a whole other story. But here he is heading to Iowa, and he said, oh, no, I'm not running. He's running.
But, you know, some other people in the crowd who were not de Blasio supporters, they said to me, Curtis, what are you getting all worked up? The more he's out of the city, the less harm he can do. And I stopped, and I thought to myself, well, in fact, that's right, because he mucks everything up. He knows little about the elements of the different cabinet posts that he has put people in position of to run. So he's always getting involved in things he doesn't really know about. He acts pretentious. So, ladies and gentlemen, is it actually better for us over the next 4 years, instead of being tortured by watching him every day on TV talking about issues that he's lying about that affect us here in the city of New York, is it actually better that he's actually on the road and maybe some deputy mayors are running the city in his absence? And maybe there'll be less trouble, less problems.
But let me make a prediction.
Fugazi answers.
Let me make a prediction, though, too, Curtis, because I think he has a good chance in the election process. I'm not necessarily saying this is way ahead of the gun. But if you look about, he had a decent win the second go round, and look at the base, look at the tea leaves. A lot of people saw him, you know, sort of a junior Elizabeth Warren. So does he have a chance to be president? I think anyone who rules him out, I think it could be a de Blasio Cuomo race, but anybody who rules him out, I think, is a fool.
Oh, Trump would love that. Imagine.
Oh, can you imagine? That would be, and I could imagine, actually.
Trump would absolutely love running against either Cuomo or de Blasio, because it would be staunch red versus staunch blue.
Although, remember, Cuomo's got a little bit, you know, of red in him, too. Some of the decisions he has made. I actually think if Trump had his choice, he'd run against de Blasio. He'd rather run against de Blasio.
Anyway, our number's 1-800-848-WABC. I'm starting to lean in the direction of maybe it's better for all of us if he's away most of the time instead of mucking up the problems in the city that already exists. 1-800-848-9222. Now, this strategy was tried before when a guy named John Lindsay, tall as de Blasio, although much better looking, he had movie star looks, the silk congressman who then went on to become mayor as a Republican.
Yeah, but he had that snow problem. Remember, he was killed during the snowstorm.
Yeah,
that
Forest Hills,
you know,
he was killed. Yeah. But he came back, and he was almost chosen as Richard Nixon,
yes,
as his running mate.
That's right.
In 1968, against Hubert Humphrey. And Nelson Rockefeller did an interference because he was, back then, what Cuomo is to de Blasio. They were at odds. Rockefeller said, I won't give you any support if you choose Lindsay. So he went on to choose Spiro Agnew.
Yep.
Lindsay felt snubbed. He then ended up running as the Liberal Party member for re-election because the Republicans,
yes,
went with John Markey. They snubbed him. He won against Markey and Mario Procaccino in a very contested race. And then he decided to become a Democrat and run for the presidency in 72. against McGovern in the primary and a bunch of other candidates, and he got killed in Florida, where there were many snowbirds from New York who remembered how he ruined New York City. And the people in Forest Hills who felt betrayed by him actually went down there.
So were you predicting that that's what would happen if de Blasio runs?
Oh, yeah.
You think so?
Look, I've seen now Lindsey try to run for president and crash and burn. Giuliani crash and burn. Bloomberg constantly say he would, but never pull the trigger. And Bill de Blasio would crash and burn. He doesn't have the cachet of a Bernie, the out the caucus Sanders, or Elizabeth Warren.
I think he actually will try. And I think I disagree with you, whether you like him or not. I actually think that he is a formidable candidate. And I think New York has given him a big platform. And he is clearly sort of the young guy taking on Trump. And he's trying to make a name for himself. We'll see what happens. It's a long ways away. But I don't think you can rule out Bill de Blasio for bigger things.
Maybe he could have Louis C.K. as his opening act.
No.
Warming up the
or
crowd.
Matt Lauer.
There.
Or Matt Lauer.
Anyway, let's go to John in Brooklyn. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here at WABC. Johnny.
Hi, John.
Hey, as you said, Rita, reading the tea leaves, Michelle Obama in 2020, it's being set up. That's what all the attacks about are on the males in politics. And all the males in the media.
And actually, you know, John, I've heard that, too. And that's kind of interesting. And I, by the way, I was there at the Republican, at the Democratic National Convention, rather. And she gave a really great speech. I mean, she is beloved in the Democratic Party. So I think that that's one you can't actually rule out. She may say, you know, maybe she's trying to be the first female president.
The Democrats love the concept of a female. And then you have Obama behind her, which will stir up his old base. I mean, think about it. It's a win for them. It's not a win for me as a white male in America, but it's a win for them.
Yeah, I actually think. Now, what about a Michelle Obama de Blasio ticket or a Michelle Obama Cuomo ticket?
I could see it. He'd be crazy. They'd be crazy not to take vice president. But Cuomo has an ego, probably wouldn't allow him. And I just got to tell you something real quick, Curtis. You'll get a kick out of this. I went to the Mets series when they were in the World Series, and Cuomo was sitting not far away from me. The guy sitting in a box all by himself. He doesn't have one friend to take to the game, Curtis? Think about that.
No, and John, his only friend was his wartime consigliere, his leg breaker, Joe Pococo, who at the eulogy that he gave for his father, Mario Faccia Brutta Cuomo, he said, Pococo was closer to my father as a son than I was, or my brother Chris, pretty boy Chris from CNN. But Coco is like a brother who knows where all his bones are buried and who buried them. And he's going to be testifying, or might testify, in the trial against the 9 corrupt Cuomoites beginning in February.
Well, that's what he's worried about, too. There's a lot of mud and kind of dirt in there, you know. But he also knows, as you say, where some of the bodies are buried, too. And sometimes that can work in his favor.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
Curtis Sliwa.
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels, was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
And we are talking about a lot of nasty boys, but one in particular this morning with the big news that NBC wants us to think was a shocker, that Matt Lauer apparently now has been accused of sexual improprieties, of inappropriate sexual behavior. This is Rita Cosby here with my buddy Curtis Sliwa. And of course, Curtis, it came down, the news broke, NBC tried to make it look like, oh gosh, okay, we just found this out on Monday, and then right before airtime, the word goes through NBC, supposedly, and Savannah Guthrie, of course, Matt Lauer's longtime co-host there on the Today Show, breaks the news. Here it is.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome to Today. And Hoda's here with me at this morning because this is a sad morning here at Today and at NBC News. Just moments ago, NBC News Chairman Andy Lack sent the following note to our organization. Dear colleagues, on Monday night, we received a detailed complaint from a colleague about inappropriate sexual behavior in the workplace by Matt Lauer. It represented, after serious review, a clear violation of our company's standards. As a result, we have decided to terminate his employment. While it is the first complaint about his behavior in the over 20 years he has been at NBC News, we were also presented with reason to believe this may not have been an isolated incident. Our highest priority is to create a workplace environment where everyone feels safe and protected, and to ensure that any actions that run counter to our core values are met with consequences, no matter who the offender. We are deeply saddened by this turn of events, but we will face it together as a news organization and do it in as transparent a manner as we can.
And shocked that there's gambling in Las Vegas and Reno.
They all knew. And by the way, if you remember, Rita Cosby, as well, hired Tom Madison Square Garden, these great facilities provided to us in order to do this broadcast to all of you by NJDiet.com. First, it was Bernard McGuirk and Sid Rosenberg.
Yep,
who
right
said,
here. Yep.
Right here. 2 weeks ago, that the Washington Post was on the jockstrap of not only Matt Lauer, ready to do an expose about sexual harassment or possible sexual assault, but also the president of MSNBC, Phil Griffin.
Who I know. And, you know, it's interesting for me, Curtis, because I worked at NBC for 2 years. So I know Phil. I've heard three names, and I'm not going to say them on the air, but I've heard three names that they are working on at NBC. But in terms of Matt Lauer, I always had a good rapport with him. I had a good rapport with Phil Griffin. And again, that's what Bernie and Sid are saying. But with Matt, you know, to me, it's, I always heard these rumors of consensual relationships. He was always a gentleman with me, but you know, there are always these stories out there. And you're telling me as a journalist I've covered so many of these stories. You're kidding me. I was there at NBC. I know the way they work. It takes a long time to go through the process, to go through the red tape. Any sort of problems that they have, there is no way in heck that suddenly this woman, as the allegation is, that she came in with her attorney to HR on Monday night at 6 o'clock, and then boom, he's gone. The biggest star there at NBC.
The only way, Rita Cosby, that could have happened, and I don't believe that story anyway. I think it was just the New York Times trumping the Washington Post.
Yeah, the competitive.
In getting the story first without giving any details, I might add. No details.
And by the way, Variety was also working on it. Apparently a couple others, too.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like NBC was suddenly like, oh gosh, on Monday night, this is new news.
And the reality is, let's say you walked into HR this past Monday night at 6 o'clock. You didn't get out until maybe 10, 11 o'clock with your lawyer. You make the allegations. You know that by now Matt Lauer is lawyered up. And then unless he threw himself on the sword, unless he did a Louis C.K. and said guilty as charged, there is no way they could have turned it around that quick.
Way, he would have a lawsuit, too, Curtis.
Sure.
I mean, that's the other thing you think about, too. In this day and age, granted, there's such sensitivity, and fairly, I think it's appropriately, that finally women are being heard, if indeed these allegations are true. You know, and look, when you hear this, the fact that NBC got rid of him, there's something to this. Come on.
Now,
you don't get rid of your big superstar. There is no way in heck, you know?
There's one person, who knows, maybe her paw prints or fingerprints are on this, Ann Curry, who got bumped off to the Today Show because of Matt Lauer. Matt Lauer played the peacock. He just didn't want Ann Curry around sharing the limelight. Boy, you know, she's got a big smile on her face today.
I don't know about that. You know, I've heard a lot of people saying that. And listen, I know Ann Curry. She's actually a very nice woman. And I think despite everything that happened to her at NBC, I think she didn't want to see NBC sort of taken down, you know, and embarrassed in the news.
Why not?
And so forth.
Why not? Look, this is the same NBC, as was mentioned. Andy Lack had made the decision to fire Matt Lauer. Andy Lack is the same guy who said no to the expose on Harvey Weinstein because maybe he was just protecting a culture that exists at NBC. And he recognized if one stone falls, like Harvey Weinstein, the Grim Reaper will soon be coming to the hallways of NBC and MSNBC.
Well, the interesting thing about all of this, as you're pointing out, Curtis, on the flip side, we saw Matt Lauer. I'll remember when I saw that came out. It was Matt Lauer interviewing Bill O'Reilly, and it was during the book tour where he was interviewing Bill O'Reilly. And it was in September, and of course, all those allegations against Bill O'Reilly, excuse me, continues to say those are not true. But Matt Lauer going full throttle on Bill O'Reilly about the sexual harassment claims against him. So take a listen. This is like a little look back. This was just in September.
Have you done some self-reflection And have you looked at the way you treated women that you think now or think about differently now than you did at the time?
My conscience is clear.
You know, look, he was going after him and going after him. Here's a little bit more of that interview because he really took Bill O'Reilly to task.
Is this a vast left-wing conspiracy?
Vast, then don't be sarcastic.
Well, I mean, but you know, I was the one that Hillary Clinton said that to here 20 years ago.
Talking about the vast left-wing conspiracy sort of against him and that it was this takedown. But here's Matt Lauer, ironically, going after him. And here it is, you know, a few months later, kaboom.
Well, let's open up our phone lines. In my mind, good riddance. Matt Lauer on the left, Judge Moore on the right. It's time for the tsunami to just come through. It's a perfect way of having term limits for professionals who've been on TV too long. We need to sort of clear out for some of the young bloods, the new jacks. And the same thing in the halls of Congress as we're seeing with John Conyers, who I thought was a cadaver in formaldehyde.
But
who
John
knew he was
Conyers
still alive?
Is still there. And you know what's amazing? As you bring this up, Curtis, I couldn't help but think about this. I was on the way here. I was in the cab, and it was funny. The cab driver, we were yapping about this. He's, oh, you're going on the show with Curtis. We're talking about this. And to me, there is such a hypocrisy here as we're talking about these allegations against Roy Moore. John Conyers is a shot of him and taking coach from D.C. to Detroit yesterday. Still there. You got all these Al Franken still there. You know, I was even asking Hillary Clinton about that not too long ago. You got all that going on. And yet, if you believe NBC, which neither one of us do, you know, kaboom, he's gone. Charlie Rose, kaboom, he's gone. And yet somehow these guys in politics and government and we're paying for their salaries are still staying there.
Well, I think also, remember, government is somewhat immunized from major lawsuits.
And it should not be, as
correct,
we have learned. And it absolutely should not be. And so John Conyers' case is the worst of it.
Look at the settlement that John Conyers made, although he claims it was not a settlement.
Yeah, right.
$27,500.
Right, for
look
a woman
at the
who said she was fired
that
again.
The Fox News Channel made against the O'Reilly claimants. Millions of dollars. So I think here it's simply a corporate attitude, both for Charlie Rose and also for Matt Lauer, that if they didn't end these guys' term of existence quickly, there would just be mounting legal bills. There would be other people that would be coming through the cracks, and it would be costing them gazillions of dollars in settlements.
And also a PR nightmare, as you and I talk about, because they clearly knew that things were in the works. There is no way. I know the folks there at NBC. I've spent time with them. I mean, we've had discussions when I was doing my show on just, oh, how should we strategize this? How should we strategize that? They go in this closed door. You know, you got your little glass offices there where I was sitting, and you go in and you talk. They bring them all in. And you're telling me with Matt Lauer, who was there, you know, look, this is a guy who covered all these Olympics. And again, this allegation is dating back to Sochi Olympics. I'm curious who the woman is. And so you go back to all of that. There is no way in heck that they would have just said, okay, see ya. This was clearly also a preemptive move because they knew about the New York Times. They knew Variety. They knew the Post. They knew they were all working on it, and they had to do something,
see,
A, for money, and B, for reputation.
See, well, Matt Lauer, if he and his attorney had a strategy, they could blame it on Vladimir Putin, that it was a Russian setup in Sochi.
Absolutely.
To discredit,
right.
To discredit Matt Lauer,
right,
that they sent over some hookers. He thought it was a Russian hooker, a gift of Vladimir Putin. Because remember, Putin.
Absolutely.
World
and it
leaders,
turned out to just
right,
be his colleague. They looked alike.
World leaders were not going to Sochi, remember, as part of the sanctions and the
right,
ban against Russia. So naturally, sending hookers over is the professed way that Vladimir Putin always extracts information, so
and
we
now
can
we
blame
need,
it on that.
Now we need to bring in Fusion GPS, too. You forgot
exactly
about that, too. We got to bring in Christopher Steele, right? You
know, anyway, to bring let's go to the phones. 1-800-848-WABC. Bill, first up in the queue from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here at WABC.
Bill. Hi, Bill.
Hi, how are you? And you know what? That Lion Louse Lauer, good riddance. He got what he deserved, and he is nothing but a hypocrite attacking Bill O'Reilly like he did. Like, he is Mr. Innocent, and you know what? He should just stay out on Long Island or wherever he is, enjoy his money, and just disappear.
Well, ironically, remember, Bill yes, O'Reilly is out there in the Montauk, yes, and yes, Matt Lauer has a home in the Hamptons not far away.
Yeah.
So who knows? Maybe they'll be having breakfast together in the Perf Club.
Asking advice?
Yes.
Rita, can I ask you a question, Rita?
Go ahead.
And here it is. With all this going on, we all see it. There's an element of enticement. and as I see, everybody sees it, and women cannot get their yoga pants on any tighter. Yet if you look at them too long, you're leering, and they could probably sue you for leering.
So what's your question?
Huh?
But you know what? You're sounding like, did you hear this? And it's funny, Curtis and I didn't even talk about this before the show. Angela Lansbury came out, what was it, yesterday, I think, and made, you know, of course, from Murder, She Wrote and all that stuff, came out and said it's the way women dress, basically, almost suggesting that. And listen, there is a fine line, as you bring up, Bill. I mean, I had somebody this morning, I was walking in here in WABC, and I had a fan say, Rita, I just think you're so beautiful on the way. I said, thank you. What am I going to turn around and, like, sue him? I think there is this fine line of women knowing that a compliment's a compliment, and it doesn't necessarily mean, and a look is just a look or whatever else. It's when it gets into someone controlling your fate. And that's what we're finding out here in this case with Matt Lauer, because it was somebody that he worked with. And if you look at where NBC is structured, and again, I was there for a number of years, everybody, so I know so many of the players there, you know, he was treated like God there. I mean, he was the lead guy. He was making the big bucks. He was the lead guy on the Olympics and everything else.
He was the O'Reilly.
He was the O'Reilly.
NBC.
It's a great equivalent, Curtis.
The guy who
brought the cash in.
The guy who brought the advertising dollars in. The guy who stabilized the brand in the morning when, remember, they had a lot of ups and downs,
yep,
a lot of ebbs and flows.
And he was the consistent. And the thing is, too, Curtis, too, is that because of his position, you have to believe whoever this female employee is was somebody who was a subordinate, maybe somebody who worked for him or was below him or a reporter on the show or who, we don't know at this point.
Well, I'm sure
she was below him. Well, that's what I'm saying. And if that's the case, then it becomes this power situation. And if, and the allegation, and again, this is just from the New York Post, I was seeing a few minutes ago, guys, is that he sexually assaulted her. That's a very serious allegation, that it sounds like it was a pretty heavy stuff.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Vinny out in Matzo Pizza, Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here at WABC.
Vincenzo.
Rita and Curtis, two of my favorite people.
Thank you, Ben.
Matt Lauer, he should have kept his pony in the stall. You know what I mean? He should have done what he did, but that's not really why I called. You know what gets me upset? It's, what are we all going to do now? We're going to run around all terrified of saying anything. You know, I have a boss. I do construction work, and she gives me my work every day. And she calls me honey and babe on the phone, you know, and I don't get offended, you know. It's that kind of, you know, that little flirtatious kind of stuff doesn't bother me. What are we going to do now? We're all going to bury our heads in the sands.
Well, and that's, and then you hit a good point, because that's the scary thing. It's like, you don't want, like, listen, I'm a little bit old school. I still like my, you know, this girl, I like the doors opened. You know, I like someone to get my drink. I come from that. I'm not one of those. I'm certainly an independent woman, but I also enjoy that. And I don't want people to feel like, oh, I can't say hi, Rita. What am I, again, I'm walking in today, and I was rushing in, and this guy stopped me and said, I just wanted to say, I love you. I said, I'm going on the show with Curtis. Oh, I think you're so beautiful. I didn't take it, oh, God, the guy is, you know, it was just a nice compliment.
I know.
And you're right. You don't want people to not have interpersonal relationships. You don't want it to be like Curtis and I have to have a cone between us or something.
Yeah, I know. Absolutely. I and I hope we don't lose that. I hope we don't lose our culture. You know what I mean? Because of this stuff.
Yeah, I agree. And I think we are at risk in some regards to do that, because it's funny now, like, you know, I've had, you know, male colleagues or and friends make a comment. They're, oh, is that okay for me to say that? I mean, come on. We can't be in a society where you can't, you know, but this makes it a little different because of the whole Matt Lauer running the situation. And this is a biggie. This is a biggie.
Well, Matt Lauer, as was predicted by Bernard McGurk and Sid Rosenberg 2 weeks ago, one shoe off the NBC legs. The next one to go may be Phil Griffith, head of MSNBC. That's the rumor that he is under the electron microscope. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
Murder, she wrote. Real. Murder, she wrote. Murder, she wrote. Murder, she wrote.
Rita Cosby in the house, our political director here at WABC. And you mentioned how Angela Lansbury at 92 told the BBC the other day that women must sometimes take blame for sexual harassment because of the way they dress. She said women have gone out of their way to make themselves attractive, and unfortunately, it has backfired on us.
And she got major slam for that. To me, that's outrageous. I mean, she's old school. I've seen Angela Lansbury. You see her at a couple of the different restaurants on 7th Avenue all the time. She's a lovely woman, but she is way off kilter on this. To make it sound like women bring it on because of the way they dress, that is the most archaic, outrageous comment.
Let's go to Victoria calling from White Plains. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here at WABC. Victoria?
Pleasure to talk to you both.
Thank you, Victoria.
I just wanted to run by you my experiences as a young woman, which I am not anymore. In the late 50s, early 60s, I was first in beauty pageants, then modeling and acting, and came upon many people that just automatically behaved like men, behaved in those days, and do today as well. If you're going to accept it, fine. If you're not, that's also fine. I never was raped. I made sure not to go to a man's apartment in the middle of the night. I stayed among other people. Now, I was invited when I was in a beauty pageant to, and since he's dead now, I can give his name, Oleg Cassini. He had his Peter Pan gloves distributed among the contestants when I was in the beauty pageant. It was Miss.
And what happened, real quick, Victoria? What happened?
What happened is I was invited to his house at 6 o'clock in the evening, 5 o'clock, 5:30 actually, and there were other people there, and including his brother Igor.
And what did he make an inappropriate advance to you?
To show me around the house, which I had already seen with the pageant, but I didn't want to insult him, so I let him show me the house. We got to his four-poster bed in his bedroom, and he throws me on the bed.
No, and wait, and it sounds to me, that's a bit of a Harvey Weinstein move, it sounds like. A little bit of the same M.O.
I had my pocketbook that he changed his mind very quickly. We went back downstairs, and I wasn't thrown out of the place, and I didn't leave because nothing happened.
But let me ask you, hang on one second, Victoria. Let me ask you, given that, what do you make of all the tidal wave and now the new news today about Matt Lauer and, of course, Charlie Rose and Harvey Weinstein? What do you make of what you're seeing now?
I'll tell you, if I owned a business, I would never hire a woman because this is outrageous.
You'd never hire a woman?
3 years ago with Matt Lauer, and I'm not a big Matt Lauer fan. I happen to be conservative, and I feel sorry for the liberals.
Wait, Victoria, hang on one second. You just made a comment. You would never hire a woman. What do you mean by that?
If I had men working for me, I wouldn't want any kind of feather rousing, you know, any kind of things happening.
But wait. Do you just think happen. You think by just putting men and women in the same workplace, it's just going to happen? It's not bad behavior.
In the same workplace in the military. Look how many sexual harassment cases now they're overwhelmed with. When you put men and women together, it's a natural thing.
Yeah, but that sounds like a Jewish wedding. That's like an Orthodox Jewish wedding, Curtis.
Victoria's Secret underwear.
That's impossible.
It's interesting because my wife at the time, Lisa, was an elite model for that perv John Casablancas.
Well, and it's funny, we're talking about all the models and the whole that whole world.
And I remember the first time I met him, I said, Lisa, this guy's a perv. Why do you have anything doing with this guy? This guy's perving young girls. Now, Lisa obviously was an adult, but he was interested in bringing in, 15, 16, 17-year-olds from overseas, introducing them to the world.
You owe me. I bring you to America.
Yeah, he ended up getting jacked up later on for that. That's why a lot of these guys love to own these modeling agencies because they're perverts.
Yeah, it's a cover. But it doesn't mean you can't hire people. To go to the extreme like she's saying, what are we going to men and women? Again, I go back to, what, do we have to have a cone in between us?
I know.
You know, we can't even look at each other. I mean, that's ridiculous.
I know I have these anger management issues, Rita, but I really wanted to hit John Casablancas, knock his schnoz right down his
and throat. I would too, believe me. And I can tell you, as a young girl growing up, there are a couple of people I smacked along the way. Listen, my dad was a fighter, so he taught me how to smack.
Anyway, on that note, we're going to get into John Conyers up next.
And I'll smack you if you cross the line,
excuses,
Curtis. I'm going to smack you, boy.
Coming forth on this degenerate.
Smack
they
that
continue.
Red beret off your head.
But anyway, right now, let's get our news headlines and updates from Ken Duffy.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
77 WABC.
All I'm asking you is for a little respect when you pass a little bit.
139. Aretha Franklin, longtime friend of John Conyers out of Detroit. Even she is not standing side by side with that degenerate, although Nancy Pelosi couldn't have been a stronger booster of him as he began to disassemble.
We are strengthened by due process. Mm-hmm. Just because someone is accused, and was it one accusation, is it two? I think there has to be. John Conyers is an icon in our country.
Well, there's more than one or two accusations now, and a lot of them have him running around in his tighty-whities, his briefs.
This is the weirdest
his
story.
Underwear.
The woman who comes and, you know, is a staffer
right.
and comes, hi, Congressman, can I help him? There he is in his little tighty-whities. That's an image I would like to erase this
Eating
morning.
Eating a sandwich.
Yes.
Eating a sandwich. Showing you the guy is like, you know, on the verge of dementia, but still he's a lech. And then this is his former spokesperson explaining, hey, that's just Conyers being Conyers.
He changes clothes in his office. Most of us have walked in on him accidentally without knocking and have seen him in his underwear. Big deal.
That to me is the greatest comment. Most of us have seen him in his underwear. I mean, come on. That is the most crazy thing I have ever heard in any professional environment there on Capitol Hill, to have a congressman walking. Just happens to change every time somebody walks in. What a coincidence.
But, you know, it's so incredible because you say, Nancy Pelosi, you're the female leader on the Hill.
Yes.
It's a male-dominated world. You would figure you would be coming to the aid, if no one else, of women in distress.
Well, that's the thing. She was so quick to come out and start blasting Roy Moore and some
right.
of these others. Talk about hypocrisy.
And I believe...
And then to use the he's an icon line. Like, in other words, because he's an icon, he shouldn't be touched. And that sort of goes back to the whole Matt Lauer and everything and people, you know, tied to others, Roy Moore and all these others saying, well, they were worried to come forward because he can't be believed. Those are the people exactly that you need to make sure. They're supposed to be role models.
I believe that Judge Moore's resurrection in the polls, because he was fading against Doug Jones, is a direct result of the hypocrisy of Nancy Pelosi attacking Judge Moore and defending her perv, Conyers, basically saying our pervs are better than your pervs.
Well, it goes back to, and I interviewed Hillary Clinton not too long ago, and I asked her. I had to ask her because it was the day that all the Al Franken stuff was breaking. And she made a big distinction. She was saying, well, Al Franken's different. He apologized. And then, of course, I had to go back to her husband. And she said in her husband's case, you know, that we're not going to revisit. People are, you know, remembering it incorrectly. It shouldn't be, you know, it was already litigated. Bygones, bygones. So let's move past that. And let's focus on Roy Moore. She went full throttle after Roy Moore and Donald Trump. And I think the American public and even Democrats are seeing it for what it is. It is total hypocrisy. And it's okay if it's your guy. But if it's my guy, oh, he's not so bad.
Right.
Give me a break.
1-800-848-WABC. To the phones we go. It's Frank calling from Brooklyn. Welcome to WABC, Frankie.
Hey, Curtis. How are you?
I've had better days.
What's going on, Frank?
Oh, hi. How are you, miss?
Good.
Sorry I didn't get your name.
I'm Rita Cosby. Good. And you're Frank from Brooklyn. Go ahead, Frank.
Yes. You know, for years, I've been, you know, I'm 58 years old. I've worked in Manhattan in offices. I've worked all over. Men that are in power are always going to try and push their power around and do the wrong thing. It's just human nature.
So what, are we supposed to just accept it, Frank?
I'm sorry?
Are we supposed to just accept it?
I'm sorry. I'm on a cell. It's so hard to hear you, man.
God, well, let's get somebody else who can hear. He's making it sound like boys are boys. That's what a lame excuse.
Let's go to David calling from Staten Island. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here at WABC. Dave?
How are you all?
Hi, Dave. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I was dating my assistant for 18 months. And then Sunday evening, one weekend, we decided to, to go separate ways, but she still retained her employment. I have a small insurance brokerage office out in Long Island.
Now, since you're not, your name's not, were you married at the time? Was she married at the time?
No, neither one of us was married.
Okay, all right.
lovely girl, and I have to admit the reason why I hired her initially when she came in, she was stunningly gorgeous, but she was also incredibly smart, and I relied on her a lot. But after about 18 months, we agreed on a Sunday morning to go separate ways. She would stay on in his employment, but it would strictly be, you know, on a professional business environment.
Now, by the way, first of all, before you go further, how did that work out?
I'll tell you, within 1 week, the following Friday, I get served with sexual harassment papers.
Ah.
What's unique about this, reader, is she cited 15 dates that I sexually harassed her in the office. And because my door is solid, she had the receptionist outside witness that she went into my office and closed the door. What she didn't realize, that what none of my girls realized at the time, was I had installed on a weekend when no one was there, I had a small security camera installed with a timer and date.
Now, why did you do that? Did you suspect she might go there or what?
Exactly why? Because I had a client. I had a client, a foreign bank down on Wall Street, whose CEO was sued, and he said to me, David, listen to me. Do two things. Get a small video, a secure video system installed in your office, and get a plexiglass door that when you close, they can still see in.
Except if you're John Conyers. You don't want to see it if you're Conyers. But it's an interesting point. But how sad is that you get sued then?
Well, here's Katie Couric, sweetheart, pixie of America, former partner of Matt Lauer on the Today Show, talking about how Matt Lauer was a tuchus grabber.
You co-hosted the Today Show with Matt Lauer for 15 years. What is Matt's most annoying habit?
He pinches me on the ass a lot.
Wow! I wouldn't have a problem with that. Thanks, everybody. Thank you. Katie Couric did not plead the fifth, I should mention.
Tuchus grabber. Well, and he was definitely, the word was there at NBC, a bit of a flirt, clearly, in relationships,
Let me give you my history of Matt Lauer before he was
NBC. The Richard Bay story.
Before he was Mr. Today Show, and let's face it, a real moneymaker for the Peacock station. It was Nine Broadcast Plaza at the time. Channel 9 was a super station. It competed with all the big boys. Remember, you had Morton Downey Jr. on every night.
Yep.
You had the Jackie Mason show. You had Howard Stern. Then you had Richard Bay with Nine Broadcast Plaza that everyone would watch in the mid-morning because it would lead with all the news and they would have other social and cultural issues. And then all of a sudden, Richard Bay in the late 80s gets into a contractual struggle with the people who owned Channel 9 at that time in Secaucus. So they're playing hardball with him.
Right.
So they bring in three different groups to compete to replace Richard Bay if they can't resolve their difference.
Right, to find the backups. Here
first
you go.
First week is the local New Jersey guy, Steve Adubato. Because remember, it's a New Jersey licensed station.
Yep.
So he did a great job that first week. Then they had Lisa, my wife at the time. This is before we were on WABC with Angels in the Morning from 91 to 94 as the morning show. And we did it for a week.
Ah, okay.
The next week, they had Matt Lauer on with Lisa.
Now, Matt Lauer at the time, right, just to give a context, I think, right, he was just a local guy in New England,
right,
wasn't he?
Connecticut.
He was just a local cable broadcast. Still a budding journalist, if you will, at the time,
right? But he hated being in Secaucus.
Yeah.
And then they hated me there, so they wanted to match up Lisa with Matt. Then the final week, it was just Matt Lauer himself.
Ah.
And they were prepared to sign him up. And then Richard Bay came to his senses and realized, hey, I am Nine Broadcast Plaza. And he re-signed. And Matt Lauer went on eventually to NBC.
Yep, as the anchor, first of all, and then moved up to Today Show in 97. But that's interesting. So it was that close.
But his skin crawled when he had to be in Secaucus to do that that audition. To replace Richard Bay. He hated being in Secaucus.
Yeah.
I mean, I love being in Secaucus.
Yeah, and by the way, I worked in Secaucus. Remember, I was at MSNBC and NBC, and at the time, MSNBC was based there in Secaucus. So I remember, you know, it's a bit of a hike going through the tunnel and through the Lincoln Tunnel,
I said to my wife at the time, Lisa, I said, you're going to work with Matt Lauer? You're going to break up the team? And she looked at me and she paused and hesitated. And I knew that was strike two.
Did she say he had a better tuchus? Was that it?
Well, I knew that was strike two.
Uh-oh, that was it.
We were well on our way to that marriage dissolving.
What is it? All these women thought Matt Lauer was attractive. I thought he was a nice guy. I didn't look at him like,
actually, in his younger years, he was.
He was. By the way, and Matt Lauer and I had the same agent for a while. We had the same agent in television as well.
And he was very charming, very debonair.
Absolutely. And by the way, my relationship with Matt personally, and I remember I actually spoke with Matt pretty early after I came to MSNBC. And remember, I left Fox News and had a big offer from MSNBC. And that was the reason I left Fox News, loved Fox, and took the offer at MSNBC. And Matt was one of the first people I saw. And he was very nice, came over, gave me a big hug, professional hug. And at that point, you know, there were rumors about him in consensual relationships. I did not hear this over. Well, and I didn't experience that. He was always a gentleman to me.
When they dropped the anvil on Phil Griffin, who's the head of MSNBC, because we had predicted that 2 weeks ago. You can tell us your Phil Griffin stories, Rita Cosby.
Yeah, I have a couple of Phil Griffin stories.
By the way,
a couple other names are out there, too.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC.
Curtis Lewa. Boom! The search for Common Ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa from the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Cherokee people, Cherokee tribe, so proud you live, so proud you die.
6 minutes after the hour of two, as we're high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us in order to do this broadcast to all of you by NJDiet.com. We're joined by our political director today, Rita Cosby. So nice, you can hear it twice on Sundays at 6 in the morning and then 5 hours later at 11. And always, great newsmakers and breakers, as you recently had with Hillary Rodham Clinton, when your interview just rocked the news world for a 72-hour cycle.
Yeah, and in fact, I was just getting some hits on it yesterday, so 11 days later. And it's because, you know, I think it's because, listen, I asked her some questions that I think a lot of people wanted asked of her for a long time, and for some reason, a lot of other people were afraid to ask it. And I asked her about, you know, is there a hypocrisy? She was going after the female accusers. There's so many reports about that, of her husband. And is there a hypocrisy that now she's saying all women should be believed? And then I asked her about Al Franken and a number of these other things. And I just think I did what journalists need to do. And I was respectful because I always respect people that I'm interviewing. I think that's important. But I asked the tough questions. And so I'm happy that it's been making a lot of news. But it's an important issue about this double-edged sword. You can't have it both ways.
Oh, absolutely. It was a great interview. Great job, Rita Cosby.
Thank you.
And meantime, the other day, President of the United States was in the Oval Office and he was honoring the Navajo code talkers from WW2 who cracked the code that enabled us to save many, many Americans from certain death. So he was sitting with the survivors with a picture of Andrew Jackson right behind him.
Right. Of course, who signed the Indian Removal Act. So there's a lot of issues about that.
Yeah. Other than Teddy Roosevelt, who right. said, hey, the only good Indian is a dead Indian, you would think, okay.
Someone should have said, hey, that maybe isn't the best picture to be
no,
there.
But
you
that
know?
Is, that is
that
this
was the least of, by the way, that was the least of it,
right.
of course.
That is this president, Donald Trump's favorite president
yes.
that he oftentimes referred to. All right, put that aside. So he's honoring these Navajo code talkers, and then he decides to pirouette away and make his attack on Elizabeth Warren.
You were here long before any of us were here, although we have a representative in Congress who they say was here a long time ago. They call her Pocahontas. But you know what? I like you because you are special.
You know, it's such a bizarre scene, Curtis, because I was watching it and you see these older guys, of course. There's, you know, just a few of these Navajo co-talkers who are from that time, the World War II guys, as you bring up. There, and he's kind of like trying to make sense of it all. You know, the guys, first of all, there's too many, so many thoughts on this. My first thought was, Trump, yeah, did it again. You know, here's a day on, you know, tax reform and other big issues on Capitol Hill. and a beautiful ceremony. I think he absolutely, I've talked with Trump many times about the military, and he definitely, I do believe, appreciates veterans and all these things. Here's this great moment to honor these heroes, and he blows it again, and he changes the dialogue. Come
well,
on.
As, you know? As one of the Navajo code talkers said, you know, when they were preparing us as paratroopers, they asked us to scream Geronimo when we would jump out and parachute. I didn't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with this. Now, it's interesting. Right. We had two different takes on this from our colleagues.
Yes.
Mark Levin, that you can hear from 6 to 9 at night, basically had a good belly laugh.
They call her Pocahontas. But you know what? I like you.
That is a good belly
laugh.
When I
saw that, I couldn't stop laughing. He takes a shot at Elizabeth Warren, and she deserves every damn bit of it.
Now, that's Mark Levin. Now, au contraire to that is Michael Savage, who you can hear after us, from 3 to 5.
The Native American Navajo Code Talkers honor ceremony at the White House yesterday, which has turned into a fiasco for two reasons. One, the president took the opportunity to attack Elizabeth Warren in the middle of that ceremony. Number one, that was inappropriate. Number two, it was conducted under the portrait of the president, Andrew Jackson, who to the Native Americans is Adolf Hitler.
Now, whose side are you on in this controversy as it continues to brew? Do you take the position of Mark Levin that it was, again, great comedic effect that Trump was able to drop into that ceremony, another shot at his adversary, Elizabeth Warren? Or do you take the more serious approach of Michael Savage, who goes, if you know the history of Native Indian peoples, that had to be a slap in the face to those who were being honored there that day? Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
And, you know, Trump is brilliant at, you know, changing the message, but also stepping on himself. Because here was this opportunity, I think, to honor, you know, and I'm going to give a different take, because here was this opportunity to honor these heroes. And he steps on his own message. He keeps doing that. And actually, yesterday was a good day from him. You know, we had word that the tax package was going to pass to the full Senate. All these, you know, he's been pushing this. I mean, that's a major, major thing on his agenda. And of course, all we're talking about is Pocahontas. And nobody's going to be sitting there really talking about the tax package. You know, you have to like pull it out of somebody if you're going to talk about a serious issue. So I think he stepped on his own message. I, you know, to me, it's sort of Trumpy Trump. He always does it. You know, he has this moment. And will it stick? I don't think it'll stick. I mean, a lot of the other comments he's made before haven't stuck. And I'm going to throw another question out to callers, too, because does Elizabeth Warren owe America an apology, or does Donald Trump owe America an apology? Because Elizabeth Warren to this day has still not explained why she classified herself as a Cherokee, as a minority.
Well, we understand because she got a leg up against the competition at Harvard University.
We know why she did it, but she hasn't explained how did this come about. She hasn't said, here's the proof. I mean, there's so many still questions about that. Like you said, she got a leg up because she claimed she was a minority, and yet she hasn't really proven that she had a shred of Cherokee in her.
But timing is everything. And this president, I mean, there's a time to say that on the stump, the political
right.
stump. Okay, you're in front of 10,000 of your cheering supporters. Okay, I get it. I laugh, too. But in front of the Navajos that you're acknowledging.
Yeah, these heroes. My jaw dropped when I heard it.
The picture of Andrew Jackson right behind you. No friend to the Native American
well,
peoples.
Well, see, but let me give Trump the background on that. I'll give Trump the pass on that because that's really a staffer's. I mean, all the times, like I remember walking into the White House, there's all these preparations. You know, you got the advance, you got here's where
I know,
we're standing.
But knowing
you know,
Trump,
it's scripted.
How do you know that Trump didn't demand that Andrew Jackson's portrait be behind him?
I don't think he did. I don't think he knew.
That's his favorite president.
It's his favorite president, but I bet you he did not know that he had signed the Indian Removal Act. Of course, a bad person to be standing near when you do this kind of announcement. I don't think he did. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. There are so many moving parts when you're in the White House and all these different things. I think some handler said, hey, go stand over there, boss.
Let's go to Eric, first up in the queue, calling from Hackensack. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here at WABC. Eric?
Thanks, guys. Hey, I was just listening, driving. I just pulled in. I'm about to go to work. But the whole thing about Andrew Jackson being there, I see it a different way. To me, that's a slap in the face to Andrew Jackson saying, yeah, you may have done whatever. But
oh, that's an interesting
the
point.
The fact that he's honoring them and there, and Andrew, it's got nothing to do with it. And I think you guys are feeding fuel to the fire of all these people that basically want to get rid of all of the founding fathers.
But now let me ask you, hang on 1 second, before we get into the whole, you know, the Constitution, all that stuff. Let me just ask you, Eric, do you think that it was sort of clever like a fox? That's an interesting point. I haven't heard anybody say that it was sort of strategic.
You're not going to hear anybody say that because you guys all hate Trump and you all look at the worst. And that's why we're never going to have any peace.
I actually don't think it's the worst. I just think it was an oversight.
Let me get this straight, Eric. We're not permitted to criticize Trump because maybe I don't like Trump. Today he sends out these videos. He retweets videos from a far right UK group that hates Muslims. You think that's the role of a president, that he should be sending out alt right propaganda on his Twitter account, the POTUS account?
What were the videos about? About Muslims beating up people in England?
Oh.
I believe a CNN crew got beat up in England.
Oh, I see. Okay, so you're supportive of that.
So you might want to research that. Not that I support it. It's like,
Eric, should the president be doing that with his Twitter account, retweeting out videos from an alt-right group in the U.K.?
Who cares?
Okay, you don't care. I care. I care that our president would associate with racists.
You care.
Racist.
You care, but it doesn't.
Have you ever been to the UK?
It doesn't matter.
Do you know what these people are about? These racists in England who put out these propaganda.
Racist. Okay,
you know, Eric. Eric, you know who keeps. You know who keeps.
I'm Puerto Rican, my friend. So don't tell me.
Oh, don't tell you. Well, let me tell you what happens overseas when our men and women are in Arab-speaking countries. It's Arab-speaking volunteers from those countries who do the translations, who do the interrogations, who keep our men and women safe, huh? Huh, Eric?
What about them?
Yeah, what about them? They need to be praised. You don't retweet racist videos from the U.K. that are coming from an alt-right group.
It's done what? Who cares?
Oh, who cares? I care, Eric. I care.
It's all because you just hate Trump.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay, I hate Trump.
Well, you know what I think is happening, too? I think that Chief of Staff John Kelly, after that tweet, it's so, you know, when I saw that and saw the video, I bet you John Kelly's like, oh, my gosh, I'm supposed to be controlling this guy.
I've been to England. The Northern Front, this racist organization, hates Pakistanis, hates Arabs, hates anyone who cannot declare their roots to be British. They hate you if you're Polish. They hate you if you're from the Balkans. And the president would retweet this stuff.
Well, he's retweeted a couple things like that where, and that's where I go back to, again, John Kelly, because his whole role was to be sort of the filter for Donald Trump. And I understand from folks he sort of like tried to take, you know, some of the phone privileges away, try to watch him a little. He said, look, I got to let Trump be Trump, but...
I bet you
John Kelly this morning, this is not, you know, this
Chinese
is a whole different
finger
deal.
Traps. That's what you need to put on Trump when he goes to sleep for the few hours that he sleeps at night. Chinese finger traps.
Well, that's why he always gets in trouble. It's the tweets. It's the retweets. It's the ad libs.
He doesn't even know who these people are. And he just retweets it.
I know.
You would think he would say, hey, can you check this out?
Well, that's exactly the same person that I believe did not know the whole history of Andrew Jackson. I bet you he just thought, oh, this is my favorite president. I'm going to stand in front of him. I actually think he did not know that the history of Andrew Jackson with Indian removal. I can see people saying, here you go, boss.
He knows the history of Andrew Jackson. Anyway, let's go
now
to Tom in North Carolina. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here at WABC. Tom?
Hey, Curtis. Hey, Rita. Listen.
Hey.
Man, give the dude a break. First and foremost, Levin is right. That poke in the eye was so freaking funny. I laughed my butt off. And, you know, this whole Andrew Jackson thing, come on, man. He didn't know that. He's
What was that, Tom? This is his favorite president. He's gone to where his home was in Tennessee. He cited the history of Andrew Jackson. He said that's his mentor. That's who he role models after. And you're telling me the one president he didn't know about was the guy he most admires and looks up to, Andrew Jackson?
No. Someone should have said, hey, Trump, By the way, just so you know, that might be offensive.
Yeah, and by the way, I agree with you, Tom, because I don't think he did know. I think in my conversations with Trump, I don't think I can see him not knowing
Rita,
and some stupid staffer saying stand there.
Making excuses for this president. He's
not everybody.
A politician.
Not everybody.
He doesn't know the ways of Washington. These are like simple things.
But you're like out to get him. You're thinking that Trump goes, okay, well, let me look at every little thing that Jackson did over the years. Everything. Let me make sure.
You know, I learned about that in grammar school.
Well, you did, but now I bet you Donald Trump did not.
Trump says, I'm an Ivy graduate of Penn, right? I went to the University of Pennsylvania, Wharton School of Business. This guy went to college. I'm a high school dropout. I knew this in grammar school, but Trump didn't growing up in the Jamaican States.
I bet you have spent more time studying the presidents than he has. Maybe he's been cramming now in the last year or so, but I bet you have, my friend.
Our number is 1-800-848-9222.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
77 WABC.
226, as we continue, Rita Cosby in the house.
In the house, talking about Pocahontas.
To Sabrizio, we go in Cedar Grove. Welcome to WABC, Sabrizio.
How are you, buddy?
I've had better days.
What do you think, Sabrizio, about the Pocahontas claim?
I definitely think it's inappropriate for him to do it, but at the same time, to claim that he's a racist over it, I think is silly at the same time. You want to argue that he's, you know, it's inappropriate, that's fine, but to call him a racist because of it is, I think, kind of silly.
You know, one of my favorite replies to it, by the way, Sabrizio, was Eric Trump, who came out, Curtis, and said, you know, it was so funny. The family's obviously like watching every little thing, and they came out and said that the irony of an ABC reporter saying it, they said, look, the parent company of Disney has profited billions on the movie called Pocahontas.
That's my point.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, they do have a good point there. I mean, obviously, you know, they meant it in a different way. I think the timing was bad. I mean, I think you and I can agree on that, right, Sabrizio?
Absolutely. But shouldn't we expect that from him now, like that this is the way he is?
Well, you're right. It's sort of like Trump just stepping on his message again. You know, that's exactly how I felt. Sabrizio, thanks so much.
Well, you figure his big offer to the electorate is this tax reform policy.
Right.
He's promised it as a Christmas gift.
And he needs it, by the way.
He's meeting with senators. He's trying to, obviously, twist arms, sweeten them up in order to get them on board. And then he completely distracts everyone with this Cherokee comment about Elizabeth Warren, and then retweeting these anti-Muslim videos from an alt-right group in the UK this morning. And you say to yourself, what is it with you? Don't you? If this is your priority, if you're saying, yeah, then focus on your priority. The guy has attention deficit disorder.
I was about to say he's got ADD, because it's like, wait a minute, you've got this important, like even today. I mean, I think the Matt Lauer thing is a very big deal. I worked at NBC. I think we all think it's a huge deal, a big face on, you know, morning news, second one after Charlie Rose. Okay, so that comes out. But it's right after he's talking to the president of China. You know, do I want my president to be talking about Matt Lauer? Not really.
Well, you see, the whole point is he talks about Matt Lauer and it makes everyone say, but hey, weren't you accused yourself by close to 17 different women?
It draws attention back to the claims against him.
Why would you do that? It's the same reason we said, why would Matt Lauer be cross-examining Bill O'Reilly on that very subject, knowing in the back of his head
he thought it would never come out.
Exactly.
You know that. It's that arrogance. They always think they're arrogant. It's like, you know, it's like so many of these people you talk to. Yeah, I'm just they're never going to catch me. Come on.
Let's go.
You know who's the toughest job today, Curtis?
Mm.
Sarah Sanders. Think about it. Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Well, she's got to do
press
the spin.
Secretary. Can you imagine that? You know what the whole thing's going to be. Forget that call to China. Now let's go back to Matt Lauer. Can you just imagine? I would not want to be Sarah Huckabee Sanders today.
Let's go to Jeffrey in New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here at WABC. Jeff? Yes, hello, Jeffrey. Jeffrey going once. Jeffrey
going twice.
Goes down
like Mike Tyson, swinging at him.
Anyway, on that note, though, let's get our news headlines and updates from Ken Duffy.
He knows the city, live, local, on it. Curtis Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
And it's 2:35 here on 77 WABC. Rita Cosby, WABC political editor, with my buddy Curtis Sliwa here today. And I was happy to hear this. You know, it's nice. We're talking about all this bad news all over the place. It's nice to have some good news here. And it shows that Americans are generous, and actually, Curtis, super generous. A new study coming out, and this, I think, is great. It says that 96% of us give to charity. And boy, is that a lot better than you see in a lot of these other countries where they like don't even help anybody else. And anyone who says that Americans are greedy and selfish, this overrides it.
Well, I think also if you bifurcate the American society, you look at those that grew up in a religious household versus those who grew up in a secular household. And it doesn't always hold. But when you grow up in a religious household, there's a certain tithing that's attached to it. You're brought under the condition of maybe 10% of your net, 10% of your worth is something that you want to donate, if not necessarily to the church, the house of worship of your choice, to some group that's doing outreach, to the needy, the destitute, the poor, those who are impoverished.
Well, my parents were not necessarily religious, but they definitely taught me about giving back and helping. And my mother and especially my dad, both of them were like, you know what, you got to do something. I remember even as a child, you know, going over. And in fact, last night I was at the Salvation Army Gala where they honored our dear friend John Catsimatidis. He's a certainly well-deserved recipient who gives so much to charity. And I remember as a young child, I was talking about this last night at the event at the Marriott Marquis here in New York City. One of the first things I did, I remember putting some money over in that little red kettle. You know, it's something that's just instinctive, I think. And I do think some of it's passed down from generations. I know my parents definitely said give and do that. But I think overall Americans just care more about each other.
Well, remember, a lot of people had to cross that Maginot line of the Salvation Army. It's like when you first saw them, what is the Salvation Army? They dressed up like a paramilitary group. It's a religion different than most others, even in the Protestant faith, and certainly
The evangelicals.
20% of America is Catholic, so you know they're like, wait, what is this? I'm going to be giving money to a non-Catholic charity.
But they do so much great work. I mean, by the way, I was staggered last night because you and I get, in, you know, to try to help charities and do whatever we can. They give out last year alone like almost 3 million meals to people who are hungry. I mean,
well,
that's
actually
a huge number.
What
huge
I remember number. Most is, and I was honored at a luncheon of theirs a while back, I had on me the money that my father was given when his ship in New Orleans was tied up. There was a strike going on. And at the time, down south, in New Orleans especially, they were anti-strike. So the seamen would sleep out on the beach while the strike went on. And if you didn't have $3 on you, the local sheriff would pick you up and charge you with loitering, and you'd have to go pick peas in the pea patch for like a month of Sundays. And so the Salvation Army, early in the morning, they would drive around and they would give the men on the beach, the seamen who were waiting for the strike to end, $3 each day to make sure when the sheriff came by, the deputy sheriffs, that they wouldn't get picked up and then hauled off to court and then sent to picking peas on the pea farm.
That's a beautiful story.
Yeah,
beautiful.
No, I'll always be grateful. And Americans in general, you know, Bill Gates of Microsoft and Warren Buffett try to create in the minds of billionaires like themselves around the world that you got to give a certain percentage of your worth back. So they took on the road this seminar to Red China, where there are many burgeoning billionaires.
Trying to teach past. And by the way, for all the criticism of, you know, of Warren Buffett, who does get a lot of criticism and some of the things he says are wacky and all that other stuff, He gives such an, and Bill Gates too, obviously. But you know what's funny? It just shows, you know, at these conferences, you can try to send the message, but you can't necessarily teach new tricks, you know?
They would teach at these seminars in India and Red China and Mexico, which has a lot of billionaires and millionaires. And it just seems that they didn't want to donate to help their own people. Russia, the same way. You got all these oligarchs. They don't want to donate money to help their own people. They haven't been inculcated with that. We as Americans, we have. And to the average American listening to us out right now, particularly in the holiday season when you're more likely to give, what is an appropriate amount of money to give? I mean, what were you raised to believe? What should be the percentage of your income that you either give to your faith that you hope will do good work with that money, or to other organizations and nonprofits.
Were you told an amount? Did you ever? It's funny, in my household, again, I remember my dad and my mom say, just whatever you can do, you know, again, putting the little money in, you know, in the, you see the uniform and the woman with the bell and the red kettle and putting the money in. I remember I had a quarter, I put it in, and I remember just whatever you can do. I never sort of heard an amount, but there are a lot of people.
Well, I remember my mother, Francesca, who was a very observant Catholic. Unlike myself, I'm an A.M.P. Catholic. Ashes on Wednesday, palms on Sunday. Then you don't see me for a month of Sundays. She would sit down with the envelopes on Saturday, knowing that the wicker basket would be passed around at Our Lady of Miracles. There was the Bishop's Fund. There was the Catholic School Fund. There was the Monsignor's Fund. There was the General Fund. Sometimes it'd be like four collections.
Yeah, they really rack up some big bucks.
So my mom would figure, she'd say, you know, we work a percentage about, depending on the income, about 8 to 10% of the net. And that's basically what we should be giving to charity, whether we, the kids, you know, whatever allowance we were getting from our mom and dad. And then also that would trickle up to the adults. But I'd like to find out in general from our many listeners out there, what were you raised to believe in terms of your charitable giving? 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
And I also think there's so many different ways you can give to charity, too. And this, even the survey, they're talking about like 40% donate money. But you can donate clothes. You can donate your time. And that's why I think, you know, and I was even saying this last night. Here I'm at the event. You have all different, you have pretty wealthy people coming, obviously, to a lot of these big charity events because they're very generous. But a lot of it's just time helping out, because some of these charities, they could use some extra help. And so I think, you know, I think sometimes you can't necessarily put a money number on it. It's just your effort, A for effort.
Well, you see, oftentimes if you make a donation to a nonprofit, you can get a tax deduction.
So, and I have no problem with that. Do you? I don't think, I think if you're going to give a lot of money, you should get some benefits
but
to do that.
You weren't raised to even think of that. You
Never.
Were raised in general to believe that a certain amount of money from your household should go to a charity of your choice.
But you're coming from, you got to remember, my father and, you know, both you and I are Polish descent. My dad came over to America with basically $100 in his pocket. And so he and my mother came through New York Harbor and literally started from next to nothing. So I always learned, even early on, the value of a dollar, you know, and what money meant. And my dad was always very frugal. And so my dad would probably, I think my dad more likely gave time than money. And I think that that is equally worthwhile.
Well, let's go to Terry first up in the queue, calling from Great Neck. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here at WABC. Terry.
Hi, Terry.
Hi, it's a pleasure speaking to both of you. I'd like to make one thing known. I'd like to know, with Mr. Buffett and Mr. Gates, why don't they take their resources and try to teach Beyonce or Jay-Z or, let's say, the basketball players who are majority of minorities? Why don't they go back to their communities and donate a vast amount, a portion of their vast amounts? I know that Jay-Z has an interest in Barclays. Does he ever hold meetings for the inner city youth?
Like, you know, you know what, Terry? That's a great point, by the way. And both of them do some charity, but I think your point's a good one. And you know what? I'm going to throw it even further. I'd love to see the NFL give a percentage to veterans groups. After all the shame and the whole thing with the kneeling, I wish Colin Kaepernick would give 100%.
I think when you look at Beyoncé, Thunder Thighs, she's given more than her degenerate hip-hop monster.
I love Beyoncé.
When Houston got clobbered by that hurricane, she gave sizable money.
That's
the city that birthed her.
Yep,
Jay-Z, I don't know what he's done.
I don't know either.
Other than cause chaos. And in fact, I'm still waiting for him to say, hey, Harvey, I can't believe you did what you're accused of doing. Because remember, he was business partners with Harvey Weinstein. And you haven't heard Jay-Z comment on that at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go to Gary from Connecticut. Gary, you're here with Rita and Curtis. Go ahead, Gary.
Hey, guys. How are we doing today? Hello, everyone.
Hello. Go ahead. What do you think?
So what's so wrong with saying that my tax dollars are my charity? That comes out of my paycheck, and it goes to pay welfare and soup kitchens and people that are on welfare. That's the money that comes out of my paycheck, and that's my contribution.
Ah, and how much is yours? 30%+, I guess, Gare? Are you in the high bracket?
Yeah. You know, when you work and you work your way up and you work, and someday you say, boy, I want to get to that six-figure someday. Could I ever get to that? And you get to that and then realize that 30% of it is being paid and coming out of your paycheck. Suddenly that large salary doesn't, it's not a large salary anymore. You know, it just is what it is, especially with the amount of people that are divorced in this country. You know, it was different when there was a husband and a wife, two people working, and there was that little extra, and you could say, locally, I'd like to give to my church or give to whomever. But, you know, a lot of single, like myself, single parents that are, you know, dealing with everything we deal with, and, you know, it's a lot of tax dollars that come out of my paycheck.
Well, and Gary, too, the other thing is you bring up, too, there's a lot of things that we all pay for in New York City. My gosh, when I get the tax bill, it's like, oh, you know, like you want to like vomit. You know, it's so high.
I think Gary also brings up the point with so many families no longer intact.
Yeah, they're paying for things. Also, they're paying for things that they don't necessarily use.
So if fathers like myself, I pay three child supports, Anthony, Carter, and Hunter. You can't deduct that from your taxes, child support.
Right.
So,
and now with the now with this new tax plan too that Trump's talking about, we can't take some of the mortgage. There's so many issues.
Oh, and, the income tax, yeah, the property tax deductions, and normally you could in a blue state like New York, New Jersey, and California, you can forget all that.
Right.
If that ever passes.
Yeah, and we'll see if that will. There's a lot of heat, of course, from the Republican side.
That's an interesting point that Gary brings up, is that people might not necessarily have, under the way families function now, the kind of extra additional money that they would have when they were one family unit.
Yeah, and also the other thing, too, is maybe tax dollars could be designated. I'll throw out another idea, is like tax dollars could be designated, a portion of taxes, to something. You know, so it's not just going to these services and other things that a lot of us aren't using.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Ted in Yonkers. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here. Ted?
Didn't need no welfare state. Everybody pulled his weight. Guys, great show.
Those were the days. Thank you. I love that song, by the way. Archie Bunker. Oh, my gosh.
You got it. First of all, before I get to this charitable thing, Curtis, I got a rhinoceros running around my neighborhood. Can you come pick it up? I know you're into animals now. The thing with charity, people are either born, you know, people, you know, we call the word, the guy's cheap, you know, when he walks, his shoes squeak. He goes to the park, the bird sings his name, cheap, cheap, cheap. And there are some people very charitable, but also very wealthy people like Gates and these guys. They have to set up these charitable foundations because when they pass away, the money would be taken away by the federal government. It would be confiscated. So they put, it's a tax shelter, a lot of it. But it is very charitable. People that the big donors went after, I tell you what, the big donors went after the cancer research centers. Hey, guys, stop being egomaniacs and share all the information. That's why when you have clinical trials coming out now, they're shared immediately by all the trials, the clinical trials.
And I think, listen, you got a lot of stuff in there, Ted. I do think a lot of that stuff should be public. And you bring up an interesting point about maybe some of the objectives. And Curtis, you were talking about this earlier, sort of the tax write-off. And a lot of these guys going into these charitable organizations to use it for protection, whether it's for passing it on, as you brought up, Ted, or also, you know, just for charitable reasons, too. A lot of those guys do that. You know, I know a big CEO who sort of set up a charity, so that way that money would be protected.
Well, that's why.
But if it goes to charity, like, I think it's all good.
India,
I don't have a problem with that.
Red China and Russia, where billionaires in Mexico, many of them frequent, they don't want to pay their taxes. They're constantly scheming not to pay their taxes, and they don't want to give any charitable donations. They basically
want
to keep it all.
You know why they don't want to do it in Mexico? They don't want to cover El Chapo's prisons day.
Well, El Chapo, but you mentioned
but that.
Carlos Slim is one of the richest men in the world. It's right behind now Bezos, Buffett, and Gates.
Yep.
He's part owner of the New York Times. He owns shares in other companies. He's a Lebanese-Mexican who basically controlled the telecommunications industry in Mexico because he wine-dined and pocket-lined all the crooked politicians there. I don't know that guy giving to anybody. And look at Mexico. They had three separate earthquakes.
I'll tell you. I don't know. You're right. I don't know if he helped in the Mexico, the hurricane. And that's, by the way, that's what this study is also saying. Is that this year, part of the reason that a lot of people did give was emotionally driven factors. And you hit the head. Why did we not hear him spearheading all the effort for the earthquake? I know he's given to some, I think he's given to some veterans things and some other things I've heard of.
I know, but
you're right. Why not in his own hometown?
Think of it.
Yeah.
Russia, China, India, Mexico.
Do you think Putin gives to anybody?
Dozens of now billionaires and oligarchs. And they throw nickels around and rubles like manhole covers.
They're paying Putin. They're too busy paying Putin. They don't have money for charities in Russia.
1-800-848-WABC.